In the mid-50s, two men knocked over a kerosene stove during a fight at a concert. After fleeing the blaze, the guitar player realized he left his beloved Gibson inside. B.B. King then ran in and saved it. He later learned that the fight was over a woman named Lucille, and ever since, his guitars have borne that name. You can find Lucille at the Hard Rock in Hollywood, Florida. Thousands of other priceless pieces of rock history can be found at Hard Rock cafes, casinos, and hotels around the world. To learn more, visit hardrock.com.
Little Stevens Underground Garage's coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock Cafe, hosted by the Mighty Manfred.
It's time for your coolest conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Stevens Underground Garage. I'm the Mighty Manfred. Thanks for listening, and please remember to follow, subscribe, rate, and review. I'll be speaking with Andy Babiuk of the Chesterfield Kings shortly. Since reforming last year, Andy has taken on the role of frontman and swapped bass for guitar. He remains the group's primary composer and is responsible for our recent coolest song of the world, Crazy Days and Wild Nights. It's off the new album on Wicked Cool Records titled We're Still All the Same. I'll play a portion of the song now, followed by my chat with Andy on your coolest conversations presented by Hard Rock and Little Stevens Underground Garage. Manfred here with you in Little Stevens Underground Garage, and my guest for today's coolest conversations, musician, producer, author Andy Babiuk. He fronts the long-running Rochester, New York band, the Chesterfield Kings. After a 15-year hiatus, they reformed earlier this year and started releasing some singles. Their new album, We're Still All the Same, is out now for a week on Wicked Cool Records. It's home to this week's coolest song in the world, Crazy Days and Wild Nights. Andy, how are you?
Good, Manfred. Always good talking to you, man.
Man, congratulations on the new long player.
Thank you. We're excited about it, and we're excited about going back out on the road and promoting it.
Absolutely. I know you got a show coming up later on this month. First, though, you've been releasing singles over the course of this year. How does it feel to finally have a new studio full-length under your belt since, like, 2008?
Yeah, it's been a while. Well, as you know, we took a pause, and then I started the Empty Hearts and with Clem Burke and Elliot Easton and Wally Palmer, and we did two records that I'm real proud of, and that's great. But Stephen prodded me back to doing a Chesterfield Kings album. I was down visiting him. I think I mentioned this to you before, and he said, get back up to Rochester and write a new Chesterfield Kings album. I'll help you produce it. I'll help you write stuff. We'll put it out. We'll promote it. And here we are. Now it's finally coming out.
You know, I got a chance to speak with your drummer, Mike Boyce, a couple of months back, and he touched on some of the new album's details. But can you remind us when and where you recorded it?
So we recorded it last August, not this past August, August 2023. I have a recording studio here in Rochester, which we recorded a lot of Chesterfield Kings records at. I've had it for quite a long time. But it's a studio that's filled with every vintage piece of gear that you could think of, including every keyboard, every hip old vintage thing you could think of, from old Vox to a Steinway grand piano. We have literally everything, a Mellotron. And then we had Ed Stasium come in from California, and he produced and engineered it. And Ed's just brilliant. So it's always wonderful working with Ed.
And you've worked with Ed for a while, because he mentioned the 2008 album, Psychedelic Sunrise. I mean, he engineered and produced that?
Yes. Well, he didn't engineer it. He mixed it, actually. We cut it and then he mixed it. But we go back with Ed before the Berlin Wall of Sound album, actually. As a matter of fact, Kurt Loder introduced us to Ed way back then. I think he was working on Living Color at the time. And we recorded some stuff with him in New York City, which never came out. And so we've been friends with them ever since.
Wow. And so what was the circumstances that had Kurt Loder introduce you to him? Where were you at to have met him?
So I think it was like after the Don't Open Till Doomsday album, and I think we came back from Europe, and I think Kurt had called me up about, we were talking about something, and he had mentioned something like, "Listen, Andy, don't take this wrong, but you guys sound great live, but you need to capture that on a record. You need a producer." And we're like, "We don't really know any good ones that we actually know the guy." He goes, "I'm going to introduce you to Ed Sazian." And we knew who Ed was. And we go, "Oh, great." Next thing you know, we're in New York City recording.
Oh, that's very cool. Well, this week's coolest song in the world is "Crazy Days, Wild Nights." You guys are known for being, of course, a garage band, 60s kind of style garage band, typified by what wound up on the Nuggets double album, and the new album certainly has those elements. But there's a lot of other stuff on there too, and this song kind of represents some of that. Some of that. This has got that. This one's got kind of a 50s vibe. From Eddie Cochran to Bobby Fuller. I know Bobby Fuller wasn't a 50s guy, but his influences were certainly from that era. Buddy Holly. What is a song to you? Crazy Days and Wild Night.
Well, it was totally Buddy Holly and Bobby Fuller. That was like the when I was writing it, that was what I had in mind. I got, we love Buddy Holly, and of course we love Bobby Fuller. And it was just like, okay, we got to do a song in that vein. I always wanted to. We never did, actually, with the Chesterfield Kings. And the Eddie Cochran thing, we should do some Eddie Cochran songs live and stuff. So it was a natural to kind of fuse all those ideas together. And, it's just kind of a fun song. And the guys did some really killer backing vocals on it. So just a fun, cool song.
So you mentioned writing the tune, and when did you write a lot of these stuff? A lot of the stuff. Were you like on vacation?
Well, actually, I took up surfing a bunch of years ago. And I go with my son to Hawaii every year for a few weeks, and we just sit on the beach and we go surfing every day. And then in the evening,
Oh, how old is your son now?
he's 26, my son Andrew.
Okay, 26. And this is like a big father son thing that you guys do.
No, it was like right after the pandemic, I was like, my wife was saying, "Look, you're losing your mind. You've traveled your whole life since you were a teenager. I've always been on the road, traveling, doing something." And because of the pandemic, everybody was stuck. She goes, "You need to go do something." And I said, "Well, what?" And she goes, "Why don't you go surfing? You've been talking about surfing your whole life. Why don't you go?" And I go, "Great. Where do you want to go?" And she goes, "I hate the beach. I don't want sand in my ass." She goes, "Call our son up and see if he wants to go surfing." So I said, "Hey," I call him up. I say, "Hey, Andrew, you want to go surfing?" He goes, "Dad, you can't surf on Lake Ontario." And I'm like, No, we'll go someplace cool." He goes, "Like what, California?" I go, "No, let's go to like Hawaii." He goes, "When?" I go, "Let's go next week." And we literally like went, and we went for like almost 3 weeks, and we just kind of hung out and took up surfing. And I loved it so much. We go back every year. And anyhow, to your question, I got this balcony that we rent this hotel, and it's overlooking Diamond Head and the ocean and stuff, and it's so relaxing. So I have a couple of beers, and I just sit on this balcony with a guitar, and I was coming up with all these songs that you hear on this record, a lot of them actually.
Well, this is so cool, but I don't want to leave the Hawaii thing because your son mentioned California. So you had never been to Hawaii? What was the attraction of?
No, never been there. I just looked up what are the best places to learn how to surf. And apparently, the southern part of, and Oahu, that Waikiki Beach, that Duke Kamanahoku Beach, where he actually used to live. The only bummer that I didn't realize is you got to paddle out like a half a mile just to get to the reef. But once you get there, it's always like a 4 to 5 foot wave, like all day long. It's never stops. It's great. Takes a lot out of you, but I love it. But That was where I wrote a bunch of these songs, yeah, on that new album.
And when you were learning, when you're surfing, so you're using a longboard and standing up on the board.
Yeah, oh yeah. Yeah, I'm not good enough to take one of those little tiny boards. I kill myself. And then some of those waves got up to like 10 feet. I was like, I got clobbered a couple times. It was pretty good. But this year was, I had a good time. I actually did pretty well.
Okay, so you did that again this year, but it was last year they wound up writing a lot of the stuff on the new album.
Actually, the year before, it was 2022.
Oh, right, because you recorded it last year.
Yeah, and then recorded it 2023. But yeah, a lot of them, not all of them, but the bulk of them, a lot of them.
So I know Stevie Van Zandt, you know, he's been a champion of you guys for a long time. And you mentioned, you know, being down in New York and speaking with Stevie, and he's like, hey, get back up to Rochester. Let's get another Chester Kings album happening. What is your, I don't recall us ever talking about his connection to you guys, or when did you guys meet? When did he become such a proponent, champion of you guys?
It was before the radio show started. He was doing those cave stomp things. Like he's huge. The Sopranos were huge at the time. He had just joined the E Street Band again, and they were out touring. And apparently he was trying to get a hold of us because somebody gave him our first album. And he goes, I got to find these guys. And like, he couldn't find us. I don't know why, but he couldn't find us. And at the time we were working with the guys at Sundazed. And I sent him a copy of my Beatles gear book. And his assistant, Holly, called me like as soon as they got it and said, Steven is throwing this big party at the Hard Rock. He's launching a radio show on Sirius Radio, and he wants you guys to be his guests. So we said, party in New York? Yeah, let's go. And so we went and we met him. And he just started doing his show. It was live at the Hard Rock. And in between the break, he came running over to us. He goes, you guys are the Chesterfield Kings. Yeah. He goes, I'm so happy you're here. What are you guys doing? I said, we started working on a new record. He goes, send me tapes right away. He sent it to my assistant. Next thing you know, like 2 weeks later, he's in Rochester working with us on a new record. And we've been pals ever since. As a matter of fact, when he started the label, I believe we were one of the first bands on the label.
Wow. So what that record that he first started working on you with when he came up, what album was that?
It was the Mind Bending Sounds album. As a matter of fact, he didn't have the label yet, but we had a song called Yes I Understand, and we had done like a goofy film, you know. At the time, nobody played videos, like, and so we thought we need to promote the band somehow. So rather than doing just a video, we thought, we were working with Mark Lindsay also. And we wrote a song with him, and it came out as a single. So we did a video for that. And then we put together this wacky, like, it was like the Three Stooges meet A Hard Day's Night meet, like, you know, Batman or something. You know, it was terribly bad, but funny. We weren't trying to be serious. And it would have performances of us. So we had to come up with a name. And so we had a villain in it that kept on saying, yes, I understand. So I wrote this song, Yes, I Understand. And then when Steven heard it, he goes, yeah, it's a good song, but it's a little too positive. I think we're going to call it I Don't Understand. And I think it needs a middle section. So he kind of basically rewrote the song. And it's a song that gets played a heck of a lot now, and people tend to really like it. I Don't Understand. So that it's a typical Steven thing, you know. We're trying to explain to him, Steven, we already put this out as a single. He goes, it doesn't matter. And we're going to rewrite it. Oh, great. So, you know, well,
yes,
you know, Manfred.
yes. Okay. So on the new album, you mentioned him singing on Your Strange Love, but does he, seems like he contributed to maybe some guitar parts to some of the other songs.
Well, he would, you know, I was sending him demos that we had at my studio, and like he was critiquing stuff, and, you know, because he's the executive producer on the record. So he was kind of like overseeing everything, which we like. I mean, it's great because he's really genius at what he does, and we all really respect him a lot. But, As a matter of fact, Your Strange Love, we had done it and recorded it. He co-wrote it with me. I wrote it a little bit differently, and then he kind of rewrote it, and we went back and forth. And it was weird because we were doing it while Springsteen was on tour in Europe. So I'd get phone calls at 6 a.m. in the morning. You up yet?
That's 6 in the morning phone calls when Jeff Walls, our late guitar player, was around. He would get calls at 6 in the morning, 4 in the morning. And it'd be Steven with an acoustic guitar. And, hey, yeah, I was kind of working that through. Well, what do you think of this? You know?
Yeah, that's exactly what was going on. And like, he goes, yeah, I like what you got here, but I think we're going to call it this. And you know, I got this middle section. He'd literally be singing all over the phone. So,
oh, wait, I just remembered one here. So he calls up and he has the hiccups and he's singing the song and he's like playing it, whatever the song was. And he's playing guitar and he's like, yeah, tell me. You know, it was like hiccuping through the song as he was singing it to us. You know, that was like a 2 in the morning call there.
Yeah, no, I. So that was kind of like some of the songs on the record. And so we recorded it. Ed came in and we recorded it. And then Ed did a mix of it. And it was funny because I was in Hawaii again when Ed was doing the mixing. Cause I go in September and we recorded in August. So he sends me one of the mixes, you know, I'm hanging out, you're drinking on the beach and stuff. And then all of a sudden Ed sends me this, like, I was fucking great. And so I sent it to Steven and he had a couple of adjustments he wanted to do on the mix. And he goes, and we got to get this like an Indian voice again at the end of the song, kind of like, and then he started singing it on the phone, right? He just sang part that we should do. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm in Hawaii, Ed's in California, and you're like in Europe somewhere. So like, I imagine we could do it. We could get in the studio and do it, but I'll have to wait. He goes, so I sent the idea to Ed Stasium, literally the phone recording, because he sent me like a text message with what should be done. And I sent it to Ed, and Ed goes, oddly enough, it's in perfect key of the song. He goes, I'm going to see if I could fly it in and just put it in. And it is. So what you hear is Steven singing it was a text message. And then we gave it to Ed and he made it work. So it's kind of cool.
Oh, man, that is cool. Well, so over the course of the year, you guys have put out some singles. And when those records came out, you know, we focused on them. And some of those A-sides are on the album. So I want to ask you about a couple of the other songs that are exclusive to the album that, you know, haven't gotten the airplay yet, really. So one of them is Madcap Marauder. Is that based on a real person?
I wanted it to be, but I couldn't find a villain in England that was not, you know, already written about. And so it's a fictitious thing. I just like the sound Madcap Marauder. It had a ring to it.
Yes, I love alliteration myself, Madcap Marauder. Yeah.
Yeah, it has a ring to it for a chorus, you know?
Yeah, and it's got this cool 60-second swinger kind of vibe to it, which I think juxtaposed with the Madcap Marauder, you know, is a cool vibe. So the 60-second swing of Night Shadows from Atlanta did that, and you guys were working early on closely with Alec Janulis. Is that how you say his last name?
Yeah, Alec produced our second album.
Second album. He's still in Atlanta. Do you keep in touch with him at all?
No, not really. I think the last time we saw him was he came when we were playing, doing a Cramps tour, and we played Atlanta, and he came to the show. Him and Little Phil came to the show.
So what? How in the world did you find out or track that guy down to start working with him?
I believe Greg knew him. And no, we had done, no, we recorded 60 Second Swinger. And I believe Greg may have reached out to him. And then, you know, he was working in studio stuff and he had done all those Night Shadows records. So, you know, we needed a producer. We knew we couldn't produce the record, the early records ourselves. And so we had him come up and do the Stop album, you know, and, you know, he's a nice guy, nice to work with and stuff, but it still didn't sound quite right. I don't think we got the records to sound right until a little bit later.
Well, the Woggles, we used to cover 60 Second Swing. We never did a studio recording of it. But, or maybe I'll have to go back and look at some of the stuff that didn't come out. But our version was based on that square root of two, not the single version, but the, so it wasn't quite as dun, 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 you know, it had a bit more of a swing to it.
Yeah, I think we did the single version, if I remember right. We just liked it.
Another track I wanted to ask you about on the new album is cut So Down in Blue. It's a really cool, I guess I'll call it Baroque Pop, sort of Left Bank, come Rolling Stones kind of vibe to it. Well, what fueled its inspiration?
I had this idea for this melody for, I wrote it on a harpsichord, you know, setting on an electric piano. And I always liked, you know, when the Stones used a harpsichord, or, you know, any of the cool bands used harpsichord in the 60s. I always loved it. And we know all those great songs. And so I wanted to have something in that kind of vein. And, you know, we also use a mellotron on it, playing the cello and everything. And, but I wanted to really use a real harpsichord. And one of the keyboards, I have every vintage cool keyboard there is from the 60s and earlier. But the one that I never got was the Baldwin electric harpsichord that the Beatles used on Because. And so I've been looking for one for years. And right before we recorded the record, I actually found one at the University of Wisconsin, and I got it, and I had it all refurbished. And that was kind of the inspiration of the song somewhat. And, you know, musically, I should say. Lyrically, it's a whole different thing, but it's, I'm obsessed with vintage cool instruments and amps and stuff. So,
right. And I think we haven't mentioned this, but this ties into your shop, your Fab Gear store, right?
Yeah. The shop, and obviously I wrote, you know, the Beatles gear book and the Rolling Stones gear book and the Bigsby book and, you know, a bunch of other wacky stuff. But my forte is vintage, you know, guitars and equipment. I unfortunately, at this point in my life, I think I know more about it than I want to, but it's something that I really love. And yeah, I've got a ginormous collection of stuff, but the cool thing is what I really get a lot of pleasure out of it is that we get to use all these things as tools on the record.
Right.
We had some 50 guitars in the studio when we were doing it. You know, we've got every cool vintage amp. We've got your Super Beatles, old Vox AC30s, Marshalls, Fenders. I even have a Rickenbacker Transonic amp, you know, that used, it was actually used on the first Zeppelin tour here in the States. It was,
Did you use that on any of the recordings on the album?
We're going to do, some of the guys egged us on to doing a thing where we're going to take each song off the record and do short little video clips of different instruments that we used on it to show it.
Oh, you should do that. That's a great idea. I love that. That's a great idea.
Yeah.
Well, here I'm going to ask you about a couple more of the tunes.
Sure, man.
The lyrics to King of Hearts, that those are your lyrics?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, those are the very, very cool vibe to the song and the lyrics. Are you much of a card player?
Not really. It's a play on words. You know, if you read into it, it's kind of a, I actually say, I think it's a story. It's a story of my life, basically. I'm very proud of one line or a couple lines in there, that I ripped off from the Three Stooges.
What are the lines?
From the I'm just a gin of rummy from the islands of Coney and Long. It's the one where they get taken in by some guy, and you know, they're trying to explain who they are. He's saying, "Who are these sand fleas?" And like, they each say who they are, and Larry says, "Well, this is the gin of rummy," you know, and they're from the islands of Coney and Long, so. Coney Island and Long Island.
So, well, to that, I answer it, yuck, yuck, yuck.
Yeah, well, yeah. So I use a little wordsmithing in that song, but it's all true. Let's just put it that way.
It was cool. Whiskey Dreams and Bourbon Dreams, very driving song. Talking about lyrics, the title there, great couplet. Where'd you get that idea from?
It's again, it was something that, it was just the wordage, you know, whiskey dreams, bourbon schemes. It's a good, it just sounds good. You know, I thought it would make a good chorus, you know, chorus kind of thing. And
yes,
it just kind of, it just sounds good. And let's just put it this way. It's about a guy I know.
All right. Well, you played this year South by Southwest. And then afterwards, you guys are touring with several other Wicked Cool Records bands, kind of a review. You played mostly in the Southwest, California. Got any plans to do more touring as a Wicked Cool Records review?
Well, we would love to do it. And I've talked to Steven about it and the guys at the label. And let's just put it this way. You never know. You never know, Manfred. You might be there, too.
I hope that you were happy with the shows and stuff, because when I was there, it was great.
Yeah, that show that you attended in L.A., we had a lot of fun. You know, there's a lot of people there. You know what I really liked about that particular show, and actually that whole realm of shows, but that specific show in L.A., there's a lot of people there singing the songs with us, like a lot of the old songs, including a couple of the new ones. We only played a couple of the new ones, but they were singing them. So it was like, that was really cool to see. So our intent is we're just going to go out and play, and we're going to play a lot. We intend to go to Europe next year. They're working on that now. And just go have fun, you know, because at this point, it's all about having fun.
All right. Well, yeah. Well, speaking of the fun stuff, I want to hear a rundown, because the one thing I wasn't able to attend was this. You guys recently played Asbury Lanes here in Asbury Park. It was a Lil Stevens after show party. You guys, along with Bobby Mahoney, Joy Buzzer, Wildlife, the Shanghai Lows. Tell me about that event. What, how did it go?
Oh, it was great. It was sold out. I mean, you know, Springsteen's playing like right across the street on the beach to 30,000 people or something like that. And that was sold out. And then there was a show right after that. It was like an after show party. And, you know, Steven was there. A bunch of the guys from the East Street Band showed up, but it was great, man. It was it was sold out. There's like 1,000 people there, and
the other bands on the bill, Mahoney and Joy Buzzer, Wildlife, Shanghai Lows. Had you seen any of those groups before?
No, we never did. So it was great to see them. It was great to hang out with them. All cool bands, cool people. It was a lot of fun. It was a great vibe. The people that attended the show, they seemed to like it really a lot. So great success. We had a blast.
Well, you got a record release show happen here Friday, October the 25th, Bowery Electric. And who all is playing that bill with you?
So it's going to be the Gripweeds, our friends, the Gripweeds, and the Jelly Bricks, who are also our label mates. And then we're playing. It's an early show. I think it starts at 7 or 7:30 or something like that. Three bands. It should be a lot of fun. Bowery Electric in New York. So they set that up for us. And that's on Friday, October 25th.
Friday, October the 25th. So for the regular release show, is there, you're going to try and play everything that's on the album or mixing, you know, for the catalog? What's the idea?
You know, what's really funny. We actually pulled out all the records that we did. And if we pick one song off of every record, it's a full set. So it's difficult to pick and choose. What we kind of go back to, like what people would always, you know, we'd be in Europe or someplace and people would yell out certain songs all the time. So we're playing those. And I think we're going to be playing about 7 songs off the new album. So half of the new album.
Well, that's great. That's cool. Well, you mentioned here people calling out a song. So if it were through the course of the band's history, was there ever a song you did and, you know, you did it and you recorded it and you thought, oh, you know, we like the song. We wanted to do it. It just, you know, it's okay. You know, I'm glad we did it. And then later on, it starts resonating with people and they start wanting the song. And you're like, really? That tune? But these other songs on the record were better, we think. If that's the one you guys want, all right, then we'll play it. Have you ever had an experience like that?
Oh, it wasn't so much that. It was more, you know, certain guys in a band just didn't want to play certain songs. They just refused to do them. And it was like for no real good reason other than, you know, they're just opinion, you know? So, you know, like for instance, the song She Told Me Lies, everywhere we went, people would always scream, She Told Me Lies. It was a song that just people liked, you know, it had a Vox organ on it and all that. And then just, you know, certain guy wouldn't just refuse to play the song. So we're playing it now and people love it. I mean, it's a cool song, you know.
It's a hit, baby. It's a hit.
No, it was a song that, you know.
It's a great song.
Yeah, well, I don't know if it's great. It's just, you know,
it is great. You just heard me say that.
Well,
I'm using the English language. I'm telling you, it's great. What's great is great.
Thank you, man.
You know, it's great because you just explained it resonated with people. So that's great.
No, it's
something
it's,
resonates with people is great.
Yeah, no, it's something that I came up with just on a Vox organ. It was a Vox organ riff song. And we built the song around the Vox organ. And at some point we stopped using a Vox organ live. So we're using the Vox organ now again live as one of the main instruments. And a lot of the songs on the new album, all Vox organ all over it, you know, quite a bit. It's part of our sound.
Well, we're going to take a listen to, you know, that's this other track off the album. But let me, if we do that, let's, I want to review here for a moment, get my thoughts back and my head straight here. So you got the record release show coming up. And about next year, you've talked about trying to do some stuff overseas and just more touring in general. Was that correct?
Yeah. As a matter of fact, just to hit back on that record release show. So we're doing the one in New York City. And then a couple weeks later, we've had so many people in our hometown here in Rochester, New York, you know, begging us to do a show. So we're actually doing a record release show also in our hometown here in Rochester at a place called Iron Smoke. And that's on November 9th. So that'll be fun. And as a matter of fact, the Jelly Bricks, we asked them to come up and be our opener here. Again, our bandmates. So they're good guys and they got some great songs. So they're going to be playing on that. And then, you know, then there's the holidays and stuff. But yeah, we're focused on next year as far as going over to Europe and then playing here in the States as well. And of course, we're doing the cruise, the Underground Garage cruise, which we can't wait to go.
That's right.
Bermuda Triangle with you, Manfred.
We'll be teleporting to other dimensions together.
Just keep in mind, we're going to be going right through the Bermuda Triangle.
Oh, yeah. That's what I said. We're going to, you know, we're going to hitch a ride to a flying saucer.
I like it.
Yeah, that'll be very cool. All right. So we're going to take another listen to another track off the new album. The new album, We're Still All the Same. And I want to go out on Your Strange Love, which you were telling us some about. But now there's an album version and a single version. And what's the difference between those two?
Well, we recorded some timbres on it, you know, to get, you know, this kind of cool sound. And we liked it so much that Ed had a very extended beginning and ending to the song. And when we sent it over to Little Steven, the mix of it, he goes, it's a little too long. You got to do an edit on it. Do a single edit, Eddie. You know, so he had Ed Stasium chop it up a little bit. So I think that on the album, it's like 5.5 minutes long or something.
That's correct. Five minutes and 28 seconds.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. So there's a single version that comes in at about, you know, a little over 3 minutes. So I think that's the one you should play.
Well, we'll get to it then. Andy, thank you so much for chatting with me today on our Coolest Conversations.
Manfred, always great talking to you, man.
Yeah, we're going to check out Your Strange Love. It's the Chesterfield Kings off the new album, We're Still All the Same, in Little Steven's Underground Garage.
That was a brief portion of the Chesterfield Kings song, Your Strange Love. Off the Rochester, New York band's latest album, We're Still All the Same, that's out on Wicked Cool Records. This is the Mighty Manfred, and thanks again to the band's Andy Babiuk for speaking with me today. Thanks also to Sammy Semenza for producing and Kurt Baker for editing our podcast. Without a doubt, the Sonics are the, if not one of the most influential 60s garage rock bands. Artists ranging from Jack White to Robert Plant continue to sing their praises. Jordan Albertson, the director of Boom, a film about the Sonics, is responsible for their much heralded documentary. It worked the film festival circuit for a bit, and this fall is having a proper theatrical release. Jordan will be my guest next time around to tell us all about it. That's Jordan Albertson, director of Boom, a film about the Sonics, my guest next time around on our Coolest Conversations, presented by Hard Rock and Little Steven's Underground Garage. Your strange love.
Buddy, you're a boy. Make a big noise playing in the street. I'm gonna be a big man someday. You got mud on your face, you big disgrace. Kicking your can all over the place.
Some things are better when they rock. The Seminole Hard Rock Hotels and Casinos rock around the clock with nonstop casino action, rooms fit for the king, pools, spas, restaurants, and clubs for every taste and temptation. Seminole Hard Rock Hotel and Casino in Tampa or Hollywood, Florida. We will rock you.